Welcome to the Parrot Care Sessions. Produced by Talking Naturally, exclusively for the World Parrot Trust, this is a series of in-depth conversations with leading experts, helping you to discover better ways to live with and care for your feathered friends. Hello and welcome to the Parrot Care Sessions. Today I'm talking with Anne Brooks. Anne is president and co-founder of the Phoenix Landing Foundation, and her original plan was to build a free flight facility where parrots could enjoy long and healthy lives, inspired by her own macaw, Phoenix. However, reflecting on the extensive number of birds that need new homes through no fault of their own, Anne realized that no single sanctuary could be large enough. Established in 2000 and active in several East Coast states, Phoenix Landing has developed into an extensive network of volunteers that facilitate fostering and adoption of parrots, and which also hosts a robust education program about parrot care to improve the quality of life for parrots in captivity. Anne worked for the US government at senior levels for over 25 years. She now puts those skills to use every day, organising the financial, personnel, administrative, technical and logistical aspects of a large charitable organisation. Her goal is to ensure that Phoenix Landing is sustainable for decades to come, so that parrots like her Phoenix will always have a safe place to land. In today's podcast, we'll be talking about adoption. It's an unfortunate reality that even the smallest of parrots will need at least one new home in its lifetime due to the longevity of the parrot lifespan. Anne is with us today to shed some light on the facts and the fallacies of adopting a parrot, in the hopes of seeing more parrots get the opportunity they need and deserve for a long succession of quality homes, and in the hopes of persuading people to think of adoption first when they consider adding a parrot to their lives. Anne Brooks, Anne, welcome to the Parrot Care Sessions.
Thanks, Charlie. So great to be here.
And before we start discussing adoption issues in detail, anyone listening to this podcast should bear in mind that a major difference between a bird that needs to be adopted and one bought from a store is that in most cases, not all but most, the parrot will have already had one or more caregivers and has lived in one or more households. And an adoption agency like yours will always take that into account when you're looking to rehome a parrot.
Correct. Sometimes it can be just one home. Sometimes it can be a succession of homes. And our goal is to make sure that for as many parrots as possible, we can help them find many successful homes as possible. So no matter how many homes any individual bird may need across their life, which could be long, that each of those homes will be a good one.
And this fact that adopted parrots will have often been in other homes is perfectly typical. Most parrots, usually again through no fault of their own, will find themselves in more than one home during their lives.
I believe so. We work with a lot of people, a lot of birds, a lot of geographic areas. And frankly, I don't know too many people who have had a parrot for the entire life of the parrot, assuming they live as long as they should because they're properly cared for.
And another term we should perhaps discuss is rescue. It's not a word you like for a number of reasons, is it?
I'm really glad you asked that question, because I think that most people have a very specific reaction to the word rescue. You know, there's some people who only want to, quote, rescue. It makes them feel good. It makes them feel like they did something for some poor animal or whatever. Other people interpret the word as a tragic situation, neglect, abuse. We take in birds from all walks of life, and most of the time, I can't even remember where they came from. I mean, they could have come from the shelter where they were dumped. They could have come from a breeder gone awry, abandoned, and whatever, mm-hmm. versus the ones who come with a Mack truck full of stuff and well-loved. After a while, you just don't remember where they came from. It's really about how you interact with them now.
I know that thinking about where the bird is at now, as opposed to where it's been or what conditions it may have encountered in the past, is very important to you. And it's something we'll return to, Anne. But you also have very strong feelings about how would-be adopters should think about the future too. We touched on this just a moment ago, but you're passionate that would-be adopters need to be realistic about how long they might be in the lives of a parrot they might adopt.
After rescue, my second least favorite term applied to animals, and specifically to parrots, is that term forever home. It just doesn't happen. Again, a parakeet should live 15, 20, 25 years. Who takes care of even a parakeet for that long? Very few people. And it's not because they stop caring. It's because they lose their job. They get married. They get sick. Things happen that make it harder for us to care for our animals. A dog and a cat, we have a pretty good opportunity of seeing their lifespan through. But we don't have that capacity for most parrots. So when people say, oh, I'll give them a forever home, well, are you really doing service to parrots when you encourage people to think that it's possible that you're going to take care of it forever? You need to start telling people, oh, I've given this bird its next good home, and I'm going to set it up for success for its the next good home. It's not the way we talk about parrots in captivity. We don't. We go to the store, we buy the pretty one, we set it up in our living room, we don't do it justice. We get tired of it, it costs too much money, takes too much time. We say, somebody please take this parrot. It goes on to get its next new, not set up for success, future. So the more we can change the way we perceive the place of parrots in captivity, then they have a better chance of staying in homes longer. But they're still going to need probably another new home, or two, or three, or four.
So where does that leave someone coming to somewhere like Phoenix Landing, Anne? Wouldn't you rather have a visitor saying that they want to look after the bird they're adopting forever, or at least for as long as they can, even if you know, because you have huge experience in adoption, that that is unrealistic? Or do you want them to acknowledge that another home may be or will be required in the future before you'll allow them to adopt?
We actually build that into our adoption application. We basically say, parrots live a long time. Just want you to know now why you're seeking to apply from us, but that parrot stays under the protective custody of Phoenix Landing. So when that bird needs its next new home, it comes back to us, because we don't want people losing connection with us. And we like to make sure we know where the birds are, and we want to be the first call should they need to place the bird or get the bird back.
Okay.
And in fact, because we're so rigorous about that, we find that we're rehoming birds already in our own system more than taking in newer ones.
Really?
I hope we won't become a closed system, but after 2,100 birds that we've rehomed at this point, you know, we've been doing this now for 12 years or something, a good portion of those are needing new homes. And sometimes people are great for, you know, years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And other times, a few months later, something happens. We just don't know when we can no longer care for that bird.
Sure.
And we just want people to think they're doing what they can do. And if there's ever an issue, they need to call us first. And that's just kind of how we leave it.
So you're almost asking people to understand, whatever their best intentions, that in a sense they're more like long-term fosterers, but you do want them at the same time to make a real commitment to the bird. That commitment is vital, of course.
Well, we do. We do have people who only foster, and they're golden to us because the bird needs a first stop somewhere, usually, to get the medical well vet checks. A lot of times, though, those are our potential adoption applicants, and the bird always starts as a foster in our system. That's how we approach things.
Right.
And if it's a good match, then they can adopt. And that adoption is encouraged if it is a good match, because we want that sense of commitment from the people to the bird to provide the best care possible, not just temporary care, but, you know, the best long-term care possible. And there's something psychological when you actually make that commitment.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely a psychological shift that takes place when a commitment like that is made. Tell me, Anne, your organization won't adopt out a parrot unless you're confident that the new owners are properly prepared to make that shift. What skills do you require a prospective adopter to have before you would permit an adoption to go through?
I think the most valuable skill from our perspective is that the person is willing to learn. That starts with just coming to one of our core classes that scrolls through all the major parent care topics. We have so many classes in our areas of operation, and a lot of people come all the time, and others come when they can, but they want to learn. Mm-hmm. And so that's really valuable to us because things are changing for the better. You know, we're learning more and more about certain parent care topics that are useful to stay up to speed on. Also, it just puts them into a community where they can ask questions. The bird doesn't end up stuck in the basement or locked in the cage all the time because they didn't have anybody to ask for help or to get a new idea. I mean, even those of us who teach, we walk away with new ideas from people in the audience all the time. So we want people to be motivated to keep improving the quality of care. I guess next important would be that they acknowledge that taking care of parrots is not like taking care of dogs and cats for the most part. It's unique, it's different. You just don't open a can of dog food or, you know, throw them a bone. The need for space, time, money, knowledge. When somebody says to us, I can't afford the adoption fee, that's usually a red light to us that they can't afford to take care of the parrot.
Sure. You mentioned costs there, Anne, and I suppose we should discuss those costs. Can I start by asking whether adopting a parrot from a welfare organisation is any more or any less expensive than buying direct from a breeder?
It varies by organisation. Everybody has a different approach to how to handle that. But for the most part, I would say it's substantially less. Mm-hmm. Not only because in some cases a bird comes already with a cage and things that it's had in its prior home, but most adoption organizations aren't trying to equal or exceed what a breeder would charge, or we just would never find any homes. At the same time, although we're charities, we're nonprofits, we are also, quote, businesses. In order to sustain our operations, we have to have adoption fees and other associated ways of having income. Some people think that, oh, you're here to help them, give me a free bird, whatever. No, we're not here to help the people. We're here to help the birds.
Right.
And that means we have substantial costs related to the birds that we need to pay for.
Sure.
So our adoption program fees rarely cover our adoption program costs.
Right. And I know it's a cliche, but most cliches are truisms too. So is it right to say in this context that if you have to ask what adoption costs, you probably can't afford it?
Yes, that's one of the links on our adoption page. What does it really cost to take care of a parrot? The cost of going to the vet for a well bird check, which should happen on a fairly regular basis, probably is the same or exceeds our highest adoption fee.
Right.
You know, so if you're not able to take care of a bird when they're sick or provide the mental and physical enrichment kinds of activities for them that are not cheap, or, you know, in the case of the larger birds, food's really expensive. It adds up fast.
And presumably, Anne, you will explain or you'll itemize those costs when someone comes to Phoenix Landing.
Yeah, we don't lay it out in dollars and cents, so to speak, but we do talk about, or we'd encourage them to read some of the materials and then in our core classes when we talk about all the important things to provide.
Right. And moving the conversation on a little, can I ask about parrot behavior and another commonly held belief about adoption? And that is that some folk feel that a parrot raised within a family will become so despondent about losing their primary caregiver that they would never bond with another caregiver and would therefore be happier in an aviary with other parrots instead. What would you say to that, though? I'm guessing from the fact that you laughed just then that you think it's fairly ridiculous.
I don't agree. Birds are so very adaptable and resilient. That is what has helped them to evolve. They are very intelligent and capable of avoiding predators and finding food and doing all the kind of things that require adaptation. So when a bird loses a home and needs its next new home, I rarely see a bird that I would call despondent or, incapable or whatever. And if a bird has developed a very good social relationship with a family, then there's absolutely no reason why that bird shouldn't have a succession of homes with other families.
Which is great to hear. Thanks. And while I'm sure you'd like to be able to rehome every parrot that comes to you, are there certain species of parrots that you find more difficult to rehome, or in fact that are surrendered more often than others? And if so, why do you think that might be?
I think that cockatoos and Amazons tend to be the most problematic for people once they reach sexual maturity.
Mm-hmm.
In the wild, the traits that they start to exhibit would be very good for them. But in captivity, they often work against them. For example, they become more defensive or aggressive, those kinds of labels that people might put on their behavior. So people don't always adjust to those changes very well when they get to those ages.
Right.
And then we do see more of the larger birds sometimes. We just have an abundance of macaws right now because they take up more space. It costs more money to take care of. They're loud when they are taught to have dysfunctional kinds of screaming. It's hard for some people to live with a screaming cockatoo or a screaming macaw. We have so many cockatoos and Amazons waiting on our wait list that it's at least 2 or 3 years before we can help those species in most cases.
Ah, that's really sad. Do you ever intervene with owners who are having behavioural problems with parrots like these and are thinking of relinquishing them to sort of try and help and advise them how to keep their birds rather than having those birds enter the adoption system?
Yes, if possible. And it's one reason why we offer so many classes. We have about 100 classes a year, and many of them are behaviour-oriented. One of the other things is helping people to understand a parrot's point of view and the proper expectations they should have of a parrot. Somebody who wants to be able to put their hands inside a cage of a Quaker and be their buddy inside the cage is like working against nature. A Quaker is going to say, no, this is my territory, and I'll do anything I have to defend it. So if the people say, oh, this is an aggressive bird, I want to get rid of it. If we can help them understand, not the bird's fault, it's their fault for not having appropriate expectations.
Someone clearly agrees with that sentiment, Dan. If someone would like to adopt but don't have access to Phoenix Landing itself, how might people find a reputable organization, Anne?
Yeah, and you know, there are so many different organizations. There are some where people are just operating out of their home. They become, you know, the bird person down the street, to the larger organizations who move hundreds of birds like we do.
Mm-hmm.
There's a wide variety. But in the U.S., I would say a good web link to start with might be avianwelfare.org. Got a fairly substantial list. And I would encourage people to look in their own communities as well. If they can find an organization that has some kind of educational component that goes with it, that's a wonderful thing.
And you've given us some really good advice today. Thank you. As a last question, can I ask you whether you have a favorite adoption story you'd like to share with us?
I do have one, and it's kind of a selfish one, I guess, because it's a bird that I adopted. I have a blue and gold named Fred, and I lost her in the pet store for years. And she was in a very, very small cage with one concrete perch. She basically pulled all her feathers, big sign on the door, don't touch, bird bite, terrible food, water dish underneath her one perch, so it was always full of bird poop. I mean, it was just a disgusting situation, and it always tugged at my heart. So not only was I inspired by Phoenix, my green wing macaw, who should outlive me, hopefully, by decades, I was also simultaneously inspired by Fred and her plight in the pet store. And so she's come to me, and been about 10 years now, I guess, and she's grown all her feathers back, and she eats everything under the sun, and she plays all the time, and she is the most companionable of any of the birds I have. And so it's a perfect example of why it doesn't matter where they've come from, it's where they are that counts. Those two birds, I got the red one who was unweaned, which was stupid, and the one that I brought in who's been in the pet store for 20 years, you know, those two came from two totally different backgrounds, yeah. but they both inspired me to care about the future of ferrets. So yeah, that's my favorite story, but it's near and dear to my heart.
That's a wonderful story. And, you know, like you say, it just shows how a parrot's life can be turned around with the right care. We are out of time, Anne, sadly, but before I let you go, I have to ask who that is in the background.
That would be my two blue bulls, Fred, who I just mentioned, and Dallas. She was the first bird who came to us back in 2000, and we didn't have an adoption program, and she's just been here ever since. The two of them were saying, why aren't you here thinking about dinner?
it's
if I had to guess what that meant.
Anne Brooks, president and co-founder of the Phoenix Landing Foundation, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Charlie. It was an absolute pleasure.
For more information about parrots available for adoption, attending a workshop, or learning more about the work Anne does with the Phoenix Landing Foundation, visit their website at www.phoenixlanding.org. And if you'd like to know more about parrots in general, then please do visit the World Parrot Trust website at parrots.org. And finally, if you'd like to know a little bit more about me, Charlie Moores, then do please visit my website, which is at www.talking-naturally.co.uk.